Hello, this is Dr. Laura Hannes-Webb of ADDisAGift.com and the author of The Gift of ADHD and Listening to Depression for the Sweet Spot program. Tune in weekly to find where your passion meets your purpose. This show is committed to helping you find, embrace, and live in your sweet spot. Among the many places online, you can find us at sweetspotpodcast.com or psychjourneypodcast.com. And today, I'm thrilled to bring an interview to you from Guy Finley. Most of you will recognize his name. He's the acclaimed author of more than 30 books and audio programs on the subjects of self-realization, many of which are international bestsellers. His popular works, which have been published in over 16 languages, have been widely endorsed by doctors, professionals, religious leaders. His most popular titles include The Secret of Letting Go, Design Your Destiny, The Lost Secrets of Prayer, Apprentice to the Heart, Let Go and Live Now, and the one that we're getting a chance to talk about today, the Amazon bestseller, number one bestseller, The Essential Laws of Fearless Living. And you can learn a lot more about his work at guyfinley.org. But we're so happy to have you here. Guy, welcome.
Thank you, Laura. I'm happy to be with you, too.
Well, I think that most of us understand that fear is probably the number one barrier to the life that we want to live, or what I call our sweet spot. And your book is a wonderful guide. Can you tell us, how did we become so compromised? I think most of us understand that our fear is a block, but why do we still feel so powerless?
It's actually our present state of affairs psychologically is a negative byproduct of a long trail of misunderstanding about the purpose of our life. And we did not create the trail of tears that we are walking, the trail of fears that we're in a rut with. It's an important point, and I'll touch on it briefly. We can never, any of us, know this authentic, fearless life, Laura, what you call the sweet spot, until we learn what it means to value who we are as we are. That is not what we value now. And the reason that fear is rampant and growing so is because over time, our parents, their parents, all through the last several hundred years when it's really become extremely evident, we've been taught that our sense of value is a derivative of what we have, of how others see us, of what we can do to win approval, so that because of that mindset, fear is actually a part of our value system, since the whole sense of measurement is determined by what we win and have others see us as having won. And as long as we ascribe to that relationship with life, that the value of ourselves is a product of what we have, then anything in life that changes, and everything does,
right. Shakes
the core of our identity. So as we get this core identity, a false identity, shaken up by unwanted changes in life, then we go right back into the same value system and try to control the circumstances in order to achieve or re-achieve that sense of security that was always based in a lie. So that's why we have, as deeply as we do, this fear running through our culture, because it is the negative byproduct of being identified with something that we were never intended to find our sense of value through.
It sounds almost as if you're saying that most of us are living our lives almost entirely for the ideas in someone else's head about us.
Absolutely. I am saying that. I'm saying that if we're honest, and gosh, Laura, may God help all of us to be more and more honest every moment, can we not see that we don't even know why we think the way we do towards what makes us successful? I never came up with the idea myself that to be a successful person means to have a fancy car or a big home or the peer approval of my friends. That wasn't my idea. And by the way, it wasn't my parents' idea, and it wasn't their parents' idea. It's a fallacious mindset produced over time by individuals who, having lost their ability to be in contact with what is real, created a substitute reality by which to measure themselves. And we have fallen into that world as surely as it was created by people who fell into that original misunderstanding.
Wow, that is, just hearing that is liberating in itself.
If we really see it, it is, because at least it would give us a leg up on this lashing we take every time we get caught in the trap of fear.
And it seems like when you talk about what is real versus what's not real, the very first lines of your book give us a hint of what's real. And you write, "There is no brighter gift, no greater potential given to us human beings than the presence of a timeless light within us whose power makes all things possible. Its celestial character knows we have not been created to live as the captives of any fearful condition." So let's talk about that light. If that's what is real, how do we get there?
Well, it begins with what we've just outlined. If I cling, as I do, and as all of us, if we're honest, what do we cling to, Laura, in a moment of fear? How do we meet a moment of fear? How do most of us meet a moment of fear?
Well, I think most of us start to kind of do this furious planning, well, like almost as if we throw a bowling ball and we mentally try to move it where we want it to go, that we're still going to be in control somehow.
That's right. So the first thing that we do, in quotes, and I'm using "we" right now in a special sense that we'll clarify in a moment, the first thing the mind does is it seeks to protect itself from what it sees is about to happen to it. Mm. Agreed?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Now, that means that the mind sees, in that moment, its own projections about how to protect itself as a form of light.
Ah, you're right.
And it clings to that light through thick and thin, reconfiguring what it needs to as it realizes that whatever it's come up with doesn't work.
Right.
Now, what we need to do is to discover that the light that this mind calls on in the moment of fear isn't a light at all, but merely a kind of darkness that is the projection of fear itself that comes up through what I call negative imagination. Mm-hmm. Because the big key here is to realize psychologically that no fear exists without negative imagination, period. Now, I'm not talking about instinctual fear. You know, don't walk out in front of a jet aircraft or onto a freeway. We don't have to think about that.
Right.
Any fear that involves thought because that thinking mind is trying to protect itself from an image that that same mind made of what it perceived was worthwhile fearing. It'd be like going to an art store, buying a painting that when you looked at made you shudder and you hated it, and putting it on your bedroom wall so that every morning you could wake up and look at it and go, "I hate that."
Ooh, that's a great way of talking about the way that we kind of ruminate and go over and over our fears.
Not just ruminate, create.
Create, that's a better way of saying it.
Because what happens is something takes place, an event, and my mind will immediately create an image of what it says that event means, what it's going to do, what it's going to cause. And as I look at what is nothing other than imagination, then the same mind divided in the darkness, present darkness of itself, now we're getting near this idea of what real light is, that same mind divided in the darkness of itself goes, "Oh my God, look at that. What am I going to do?" And it is looking at a picture it made that as it looks at it, it fears its own imagery. Then it tries to control what it imagines will take place, and it begins to resist, key word here, it begins to resist its own negative picture. Next big idea. Resistance is negative attraction.
Wow, that's a big one.
Huge.
Okay, so resistance is negative attraction, meaning you, I guess this comes back to what you fear you bring into your life.
Yes, but now we're not just talking in philosophical terms. We're looking into the actual psychologic dynamic.
Wow.
Because as I push against this thought of my own that I think is the, in other words, my mind makes an image of what it says happened. But what it makes the image of is not what has happened. It is the image of what I don't want to have happen.
Right.
And as I push against it, I'm basically marrying myself to it.
Wow. I've never heard it put that way. And so it's a way of saying that we're creating this reality and then pushing
we
against
strengthen,
it.
We produce the pattern, Laura. And then as we produce it, we resist it. As we resist it, we strengthen it. And as we strengthen it, our belief in the whole unconscious cycle is strengthened because the pain and fear, I have a poem when it comes to fear, the feel is real, but the why is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
The feel is real, but the why is a lie. This is right in the new book, The Essential Laws of Fearless Living. So we have, and we do. No one's saying we don't feel fear.
Right. Okay, got it.
Yeah, we have this great reptilian base at the back of our head, and, you know, the fight-flight syndrome, and the adrenals kick in, and all the hormones start jumping, and, oh, man, I feel this fear. All I've ever known to do, though, in the moment of fear, is let my mind show me why I feel those things. Now, what I look at when I feel these things is the image my own mind has made of the initial reaction. Now I'm ruled not only by the negative state, those dark feelings, but by the imagery as well. But we can see and are invited to that the feel is real, but the why is basically nothing other than negative imagination. So we don't need powers. Instead, we need to see where we are consenting to be made powerless through the absence of real light and the embrace of a false light.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's the real light, by the way, that is showing us what we're describing here together.
Right. That's a great point. And so what you're saying is that a lot of what we fear is really just an illusion. And
absolutely.
And that if we could turn that around, it makes me wonder, you know, the possibilities are that we would become unstoppable.
Well, speaking of the title of one of my albums, yes.
Yes.
That is the secret of being unstoppable. Not just that we can turn this around, but that when we're afraid and a captive of that cycling of negative thoughts and the patterns they produce, the only possibilities we see in those moments are the ones that fear itself are offering to protect us through. And when we remain a captive of that content, we are also at the same time agreeing to live within the limitation of those possibilities. And here's the big idea as far as I'm concerned, that we never discover that every last one of these moments of fear, worry, anxiety, doubt, every one of them, that contraction that we experience within us is not due to an adversarial moment, but to life itself inviting us to transcend who we have mistaken ourselves to be right up until that moment.
Wow, that is a huge one. Can you give us an example of either something from your life or someone that has written you a question and you help them where something happened or was about to happen that they were afraid of, but it was actually, as you're describing, life wanting to take them to another level?
Every one of us can climb right on board what I'm about to say, and I'll use you as the foil, okay?
All right.
Because I know that you will instantly get this. So will your listeners. Have you ever been in a crisis?
Yes, a couple.
Right. Now, one of the great paradoxes, as well as massive contradictions in our life, is that if we've really been through a crisis, and I call them close encounters of the truthful kind, because what is a crisis other than a moment where something that I have been lying to myself about, not deliberately, but something that I believe is true, finally is revealed to me as not being true. Examples. I'm in control of my drinking. This abusive relationship will finally work out. I can work, 100 hours a week and not get sick.
Wow.
So I overeat. It's not that bad of a habit. Fill in the blank, listeners. We've all been there. And then one day, life in its compassion, not in its punishment, says, hey, Laura, this can't go on, kid. You're done here. This man, this woman, this bottle, this drug, this job, this ideal carried you to this point because you valued it necessarily as an instrument of your understanding, but now it is time to let go and outgrow who and what you have been. Therefore, you are no longer able to control or compromise yourself further through this relationship, whatever it is. And you go, oh no, I have to. Who will I be without the confidence this drug or drink gives me? Who will I be without that person or this position, without that possession? But life continues to bring the lesson. I like to say that lessons ride in on the back of these events, and when it's time to let go of who of what we've been, the lessons come back faster and more furiously and with less room to wiggle. And there we are, and finally, if the crisis is genuine and we can no longer lie to ourselves about our capacity to reconfigure things, we have no choice but to let go. And what is it, Laura, that I'm really letting go of in that moment of crisis?
Well, you're letting go of the false idea of security or self.
My identity up until that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot find myself in you anymore, whatever you constitutes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yes or no, when I really get to that point where I recognize I'm genuinely powerless, do I exit that moment? I mean, does the earth open, I fall in, and I never come out again? Or do I exit the moment with more understanding about what is compassion, with more patience, with a strength that I could have never given myself were it not for the pain that was unendurable? You name it, do I not exit that moment better than the one who entered it?
That's right. Well, I think so. What you're saying is that we walk away with the lesson, we walk away with the gift, and the opportunity to become who we really are.
We enter into who we are, the possibility of it at that moment, when we discover and release the impossibility of continuing what we've been. And that's eternal.
Wow.
That is the genesis itself.
That's interesting. And it kind of illuminates, and I think one of the most profound things that you write is that the secret to what all of us are searching for is to want what life wants.
Yes.
And that's what we begin to get clarity about as we emerge from a crisis.
Yeah, I mean, look, here's, to me, one of the most encouraging things in the world. First of all, we have to look at both sides. As long as I meet life, and how many of us will agree that at least 50% of the time, we don't want what just happened to have happened.
Right.
At least 50% of the time.
Yes.
Which means at least 50% of the time, I'm resisting life. Now, can I learn from life? Can I commune with life? Can I find love in life of any order if I'm resisting it? Mm. Or is resistance separation?
Mm.
So I cannot learn from what I resist, which means at least half of my life is spent saying, I don't want to learn.
Right. That's such a great point. So would it be fair to say then that as we're going through a crisis, if we were to say, according to what you're saying, that there's a gift in here somewhere. It reminds me of that joke about the pony being in there somewhere. But if there is a gift, or assuming that this is a gift, what would it be?
The discovery that who and what you are is made for everything that touches it, good or bad, because as you discover who and what you are, you realize that every stirring that the cosmos creates is to reveal to you yet one more mansion, one more kingdom, one more room in what is literally a limitless reality of your own consciousness.
Wow. You know, I love that. I have to tell you, I have so many dreams about exactly what you just said. Here's a room in my house I didn't even know about. What could I do with this?
You know, Christ himself, Christ said, my Father's kingdom has many mansions. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not religiously oriented, you can understand that when you go through a crisis, the crisis is the walls closing in on you, not to crush you, but to invite you to enter into a room that holds the room you just were pushed out of, but that holds larger walls that, by the way, will become the next room you're invited to exit, until you realize that there really is no house at all that can hold you, that you are a relationship with a timeless reality, this living light, this conscience that cannot be made captive, and that all life is trying to do with everything it brings to us is say, hey, Laura, Guy, want to see something really nice? There's something more than the limit of your present view. And all you have to do is realize that you trying to control what you see is creating the pain that you're in. Release the control of what you want to see and discover therein that who you are cannot be made a captive of any event any more than you can put sunlight in a bottle.
Wow. Now, so if someone's listening to this and they're really resonating to it, but they also recognize that they are feeling fear, and they want to know, what's a simple practical step that I could take to begin to live this fearless life?
All right, simple practical step. First, we must understand that we need new understanding. I mean, there's just no way around it. You want, you know, the definition, what's the definition of insanity, Laura?
Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Yes. So if I continue to meet those moments that I don't want, not wanting them, what else is going to happen to me?
Same thing.
So I have to see that that's a dead end. If I see it's a dead end, then I have to be willing to meet it with a new understanding, no matter how limited it may be. What's the new understanding and its application? So here's a simple way to get at it. Number one, anytime you feel a form of stress, and stress is just a glorified word for a negative reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you feel a negative reaction, anger, fear, worry, doubt, you will feel it because there is an instantaneous contraction in your mind, in the energy field that your mind represents more accurately.
Mm-hmm.
In that field of energy, there is an instantaneous contraction. That contraction is the tell. You know, if you play cards, bridge, poker, see somebody make a face, the tell. And you use the tell. You catch the stress, and you realize, whoa, I am feeling this because something in me is resisting what I see.
Right.
Ah. So, what I see isn't the problem.
Mm.
It's the resistance to it
that
is defining what I see. Now I've taken back, and I use this word rarely, true power.
Mm.
Because I'm not powerless anymore with the false belief that the situation is what's making me suffer. My suffering is my resistance to it, and it's also the possibility killer.
Oh, got it.
Now, all right. Whew. So wait a minute. I heard that what I must do here is bring my attention back to my own heart and my own mind instead of letting my attention be drawn out and dragged through that dead end feeling that this person or condition is responsible for the conflict. So my resistance is the reason for this pain and the fear.
Mm.
Now what do I do? Here are the three steps. You ready?
Got it. Yeah.
Engage, embrace, endure. Engage, embrace, endure.
Okay.
All right. What's engage? Engage is use the moment I just described. My mind wants to engage me with what I see as being you, them, this, that, oh, there. There's the problem. No, that's not the problem there. The problem is in the resistance. The resistance is in my psychology, my field of energy, whatever we want to use it. So I engage the moment by bringing my attention back where it belongs, which is within myself. No more blame.
Ah, there you go. No more blame. Okay.
So there's engage.
Okay.
Now comes what? Embrace. Ooh. Embrace the moment? How do I embrace what I don't want? Because I see that what I don't want is being produced by my mind that insists it knows what's good.
Hmm.
But if my mind knows what's good, why is it punishing me right now?
Hmm.
We're collapsing time. We're collapsing the blame game.
Mm-hmm.
If I know what's good for me, then why am I continuing to resist my own imagination?
Hmm.
Can you see it, Laura?
Right, got it. So
here's this negative, it's telling me, oh, God, look what's going to happen. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. Well, who created that picture in my mind? You didn't. I don't know what 10 seconds is going to bring from now, let alone 10 minutes or 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
So if I know what's wrong, it's my mind projecting what's wrong and then beating me up to protect me from its own projection. So I endure. I engage, I embrace the moment, knowing that I must keep my attention here in the light that is revealing the darkness, not the darkness that's pretending to be the light.
Mm-hmm.
And then I endure it. And what happens when I endure it? You said to me before the show started, what happens? I get to see that this is a mechanical reaction, that this fear is a product of a mind set against itself without knowing it, and that it will wear itself out if I don't feed it. And I will discover the truth of myself in no other way. So I withdraw my consent to be a conspirator in my own conflicted moment. And as I do, the energies that produce that pain reveal themselves as being self-produced, and I am released into a world of possibilities I couldn't have dreamed existed until I let go of the false idea of life and the self that was battling it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Right. So it's about, this part of doing something different than we always do is in some way saying, well, my thoughts about this,
it's a lie.
It's a lie.
They're a lie,
and
period.
Even our feelings about it, I think there's some, theories that, our feelings, we have to trust our feelings. But the experience I was telling you about was I found out that my thoughts were wrong and my feelings were wrong.
Because, look, we mustn't say the feelings are wrong in a moral sense.
Right.
The feelings are a product of a body reacting hormonally to what the mind sees is real.
Right, got it. So it's...
But we see the mind sees isn't real, but the feelings are. So yeah, okay, I'm full of fear and rage and grief, but they are being produced by a body that is an instrument of a mind that has been the unconscious instrument of its own misunderstanding.
Right, right. And so beginning to do something different, to do this engage, embrace, and endure, opens up the possibility of something new coming in, and that being the light.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? the whole reason that we can even say that to ourselves or even think about its possibility is because of the light. How would I know that the darkness that I was taking to be my friend isn't, unless something in me shows you me it's not the light? Anxiety, for instance, promises relief from the pain of itself if we rush. So we are shown by anxiety a pleasure to come, and we take that guidance as a form of light. But anxiety never brings an end to anxiety. Anxiety merely foments itself by promising us pleasure if we'll rush. Only the light within us that can see the truth of that is the real light, and it removes us from the relationship we had with ourselves that believed in a false light.
Right, wow. And so it's the sense that it always seems like there's something more important to do. And I know this is one of your own quotes, but that just sort of the quietly being yourself is almost always the answer.
Yeah, but what in the end, what else can we do other than be what we really are in that moment? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, and this is part of that value system of fear I was talking about, we have been conditioned to believe that who and what we are is not enough, and that we can only find ourselves through imagining first what is greater than what we are, so that turn around and find out we're punished by the very image we have of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because we never measure up, and even if we do, the thrill of that measurement wears out, and we have to come up with yet another race to win and run that never ends, because the self that finds itself through that form of psychology is insatiable.
Right, right. Wow. Well, Guy, I know we just have a half hour today, and we're getting near the end. So I wanted to give you a chance to tell our listeners about all the wonderful resources you have available and about your website, and to remind us the title of your book and where we can get it. And I know you're doing some workshops coming up. Anything you can tell our listeners about where we can get more of this?
Thank you. Well, first, go to guyfinley.org, G-U-Y. F-I-N-L-E-Y, F-I-N-L-E-Y, guyfinley.org. And right on the homepage, there is a free, we call it a starter pack, and it's some free downloadable MP3s, some PDFs, and a free newsletter that comes once a week with a special key lesson, like some of the ideas that Laura and I have been talking about. So that's free. You can spend literally 6 months on my website going through the free materials that are offered there, and you can access all of it with a search engine right on my website that will allow you to search by topic or concern. So guyfinley.org is the way to get started. I'm going to be at the Omega Institute in the middle of September for a 5-day workshop and intensive there that will go deeply into these ideas. Once a year at the Life of Learning Foundation, where I speak 4 times a week in Southern Oregon, we have an intensive. But any weekend is a great time to come, and there's nothing to join and no expense, no cost. $3 donation at the door at the foundation, and if you can't afford it, you're not turned away. And that's the highlights. Oh, and of course, the new book, Essential Laws of Fearless Living. All the major online stores have it. Your book, brick and mortar, will. But if you go to guyfinley.org, you get it with a free DVD and other gifts. I think it's 5 gifts my foundation gives away. So guyfinley.org, and you can see Essential Laws of Fearless Living right on the homepage. And Laura, I enjoy our conversation. Perhaps maybe November or December, if you wish, we can get together and do another half hour and talk about these important ideas.
You know, I would love to do that, and I you know, was thinking about your comment that the real secret is wanting what life wants. And it strikes me as, you know, because all the rave is, you know, the other secret, which is how to get what you want. And I realize in my experience with that so many people are using sort of the other secret in the service of fear oh, I have to get that bigger house, but they're not doing the backtracking.
Exactly.
Right. And so I think that what you have to offer is a breakthrough and incredibly refreshing, and it will help people who are sort of maybe even effectively using the other secret, but using it in the service of their fears. And so I love your work. I'm a great fan, and thank you so much for everything, Guy.
We will speak again.
Yes, we will. Take care.
You too.
Bye.